Good morning. It's great to see all of you. All the great religions of the world speak of some form of the golden rule. You know, do unto others as you would have done unto you, and of loving your friends. There's only one faith, though, only one, that's crazy enough to speak of loving your enemies. Jesus repeats the golden rule today, but then he speaks about it on a much higher level as well. To love those who hate you. Those people who have harmed you or harmed someone you love. Who have dragged your name through the mud and spoken ill of you. To love your enemies. There's not much you can really elaborate on that. Jesus is very direct and plainly spoken here, only to emphasize it, because he's very clear. But you can hear this, Jesus' Sermon on the Plain, hear the Beatitudes he speaks about here, and to think, that's really nice. That sounds really nice. That's a really high ideal. But the world doesn't work like that. And you would be right. The world doesn't work like that. And how's that working out for the world? How's it working out? You'll know it by its fruits. That the world doesn't work this way. But God does. The world doesn't work this way, but Jesus Christ does. And to be his disciples means we must as well. That to be a disciple of Jesus, it goes way beyond just being kind to those who are kind to us. Treating others as how we would want to be treated. It goes way beyond that. It demands more of us. It demands that we live in a radically different way from the world. Because Jesus is a call to live and to follow him and to do as he does. There's a danger. So when you have a gospel like this, there's a danger in just giving examples, because on one side you can speak about someone in this extreme circumstance, right? This extreme circumstance of something that happened to them. And you can talk about how in response they loved their enemy. In an amazing way they did good to them and it transformed the other person through God's grace. And you can hear about that and it sounds really amazing, but it can become very unrelatable. Like, wow, that's amazing, but those are pretty extraordinary circumstances. And on the other side, you can give daily examples which can make it sound all very trivial. The little kid who pushes over another kid and then he comes back and gives him a flower, whatever. I want to speak just very plainly to everyone here, though. Instead of diving deep into the theology of it, which is beautiful and it's there, I mainly just want to speak very plainly to you. Because I want to first speak to those who know exactly what it means to have someone who hates you. To have someone who actually truly is an enemy and someone who has done harm to you or to someone you love. You don't need an example. You don't need one at all because you know it already in your own life. And what the response is to that. That when someone has harmed you, even someone who has just spoken and gossiped about you and said something to drag your name through the mud or whatever it might be, the internal earthly response within us is we want to nail that person to the ground. Just as Abishai did or wanted to do. That's the internal earthly response of it. But Jesus speaks of not only forgiving that person, but this goes beyond just forgiveness, to forgive them, but also to love them, to pray for them. Not just, oh Lord, please give them what's coming to them. God, dearest God, I don't want them to go to hell, but maybe just a really long time in purgatory. It might change their heart. No, to actually pray for them, to pray for their good, to pray that they might have joy in their life, to know that someone who has hurt you has been hurt themselves, and to see them with eyes of compassion. That the world doesn't work this way, but Christ does. St. Augustine, writing in the 5th century, he spoke about just war. Because for the first 4 centuries, Christians, there was a huge argument of whether a Christian could even fight in a war or not, could even put themselves in a position to kill another person. And Augustine goes through in his work, The City of God, and he says in his just war theory that there's one purpose and one alone with which a Christian or a nation can engage in war and it to be just. And it's the principle of love. Not just love for one's country, but the principle of love for one's enemy. And he goes through and elaborates what that means and what that looks like and what the principles are from that. That you who have been harmed yourself, or who know what it means to hate someone, to have an enemy, this is the radical thing that Jesus calls us to, because there's only one way out of the hell that can become this place within our soul, which is hatred, and which is this desire to nail one to the ground. The other of you I want to speak to, and this encompasses all the rest, is those of you who hear this and think, I don't really have any enemies. I get along with everyone. There's much one can say to that, but what Jesus says to it, Jesus said to his disciples, to you who hear, I say, meaning he's speaking to all if they would but hear, love your enemies. He doesn't say if you have enemies, love them. Rather, love your enemies. Because if you are a disciple of Jesus, if you are striving to follow him in your life, to know that there are those who hate everything you believe, everything you value and hold dear. You have enemies. And this isn't to say this to rile you up and like, "Arr." No, it's to say it to provoke a response of this deep Christian love within you. That our whole mission as Christians is to be the presence of Christ and to be praying as Christ does for those who do hate you and hate what it is that is within you if you are a disciple of Jesus. You know, the church, when it chooses the readings, it chooses them all because there's a theme that ties them together. I want to draw your attention to just these 2 stations of the cross right over here. You guys can look back. I know you have strong backs. You can turn. Because the first reading speaks about this desire of Abishai to nail Saul to the ground. It's this earthly desire we have within us for revenge. But Jesus came and took on our earthly nature and he raised it up. And we see here the fulfillment of what's spoken of in the first reading and in that second reading of St. Paul, of the earthly being transformed into the heavenly, of Jesus himself being nailed to the earth so that he could raise what's earthly up into the heavenly, into the cross itself. And if you follow, especially with our stations of the cross along, you see in just about every station, you see the Roman centurion with the spear and that Roman helmet there, 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 and here as well. And if you remember, especially in the Gospel of Luke, as Jesus is going along and as Jesus hangs upon the cross, he's praying for those who are putting him to death. He's blessing those who are killing him. And if you remember, the centurion is the one who takes the spear and actually jabs it into Christ, into his side, into his heart. And it's from there, having been raised up into the heavens, that the blood and water comes forth from his heart, which is the source of all mercy. And who is the very first person who is converted as that blood and water, the mercy hits him? It's this guy right here. It's the centurion. He falls to his knees and declares, truly this man is the Son of God. To be a Christian is to live in that way, because that's what converts the world. That's what breaks the cycle of evil, is to live in that way. Is it radical? Absolutely it is. But it's also what Christ calls us to. Does it make sense to the world? Does it work in the world? Perhaps the world says it doesn't. But this is what God has called us to, because it works in how God has brought salvation to all of us, to raise what was earthly to the heavens.